You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today is going to be a shorter edition of my Friday show. Normally on Fridays I go at least an hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes as long as 3-4 hour shows. But today, because I've had some health issues, it's going to probably be about an hour tops. And there's really one story that's dominating the news, and that's the sudden resignation, although it's really not that sudden, of John Boehner, the House Speaker. He announced this morning that he will be resigning effective October 30th. And now we have a number of Republicans, primarily in the leadership, that are going to run for that position. Probably the leader is the majority leader, who is Kevin McCarthy. But most of the other ones in the leadership are possible candidates. Who knows how this is going to shake out? I'm not terribly interested in it, but there's one aspect to it that I'd like to pursue. And I was looking at Conservative Review has a scorecard where they rate both House and Senate Republicans and Democrats and give them a rating, a letter grade as well as percentage grade, as whether or not they're conservative or not. If you get 100, or really, as far as I'm concerned, if you get between 80 and 100, you're most likely a conservative. If you take it down to 70%, obviously you're going to get more people, but you're shading into moderate territory. Anything below 70%, as far as I'm concerned, you're a moderate progressive Republican. And if you look at the leadership, it's rather striking. You have John Boehner was at, I believe, 35%. So if any of the Republican current leadership should run, it's going to be an improvement. For example, a person that's not going to run that many people could get behind is Republican Representative Congressman Paul Ryan. He has a rating, and this might surprise many people, of F. 58%. Not very good. However, there might be a woman speaker, Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers from Washington State. She's at 49%. If you look at Kevin McCarthy, he's an F at 45%. I'm giving you these ratings for a reason, to make a point. I've known this for many years, but a lot of Republicans, or I should say a lot of conservatives and libertarians, tend to forget this. The Republican Party is not a conservative party. It's certainly not a libertarian party, and it's certainly not a Tea Party party. It's a moderate progressive party. That's the problem. We have two political parties that are for big government. They're both big government parties. And the way you discover that is look at the ratings of the leaders. And you can go to Conservative Review. There are other outfits that do this. And you can look at the scores. They're not encouraging. Now, I'm not looking for the perfect Republican. I have no problems voting for anyone, as far as I'm concerned, that has at least 80% or more that's a Republican. And the reason I say that, because everyone comes from a different district. And to a certain extent, the votes that the representatives cast have to reflect the interest of that district. So while there are some very good conservatives that are in the 90s, and they are several of them, a couple have 100%, a couple of others have 96, 95, 94, 92. But what's the problem? And this is the point I'm going to make. The problem is we simply don't have enough conservatives, enough libertarians, enough Tea Party movement congressmen and women. You need the votes. Votes count. Votes matter. And until we get a majority, and I would say over 200, ideally about 208, it's not going to be a conservative party. Now, there's a lot of growing room. There's a lot of opportunity. Because the majority of the Republicans, if you believe Conservative Review, and that's, a fairly reliable source, there are simply too many moderate Republicans. That's why John Boehner, he didn't really have to retire. I think he had the votes, and that's the consensus, to keep his speakership. And he would also get support from the Democratic Party. The issue really is leadership, an ability to fight and take it to a vote. And fight Obama instead of playing dead. And that means building coalitions within the Republican Party. It also means having a willingness to fight. And that's one of the big complaints against the Republican Party's leadership. I call them the P's, the political elitist establishment. Both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are controlled by moderates. They always have been, always will be. There is no strictly conservative party. There's no strictly libertarian party, although there is a libertarian party, but they seldom get elected, which leads me to my point. There might be a conservative challenge to the leadership. I don't think they're going to get elected, though, but it could happen. And the only way you get elected House Speaker, you need a majority. The conservatives simply don't have the votes. If you combine the conservatives, the libertarians, and the Tea Party, you're way short. So until that changes, and that's going to take several election cycles where the current occupants are challenged in primaries and defeated, and then whoever the conservative, libertarian, or Tea Party member that gets the primary nomination still has to run against the Democrat nominee and has to win. So I'm not expecting this to happen anytime soon. I think you're talking at least 3, 4, or 5 election cycles. In other words, upwards of 10 years. That's why I'm not for trying to reform or try to get control of the Republican Party. I think it's simply a crusade that you're going to lose. What I'm waiting for is the number of people that consider their party affiliation to be independent exceeds 50%. That's also going to take 5 to 10 years, maybe longer. The number has been inching up, up, and up for many years to where today it's regularly in the 40% range. But the reason why I believe that 50% is the tipping point, that means independents outnumber both Republicans and Democrats. And then it makes a lot of sense to take it one step further, and this is the critical step, and it takes a lot of money and time to do this, is the formation of a very viable party where independents are at the core of that party. You see, what has happened is both the Democratic Party and Republican Party have been losing their voter base. It really happened to the Republicans in 2006. And right now, they're at roughly, and this is going to fluctuate, the Republicans are right at about 25%. Sometimes it's a little higher, sometimes it's a little lower, but a good marker is about 25%. The Democrats are losing ground, mainly because of Obama. They were up in the 35%. They had about a 10% spread, but that has been evaporating over time, and now it's roughly at about 30%. So the two parties, Democrat and Republican, today, in terms of voter registration, and it's about 55%. Now, it varies from state to state. I'm talking nationally. And most of this is based on the Gallup poll. Gallup has been doing this poll for many, many years. It surveys the American people and asks them, what is their party affiliation? Are you Republican? Are you Democrat? Are you independent? And if you're independent, are you leaning Republican or leaning Democrat? Now, all of this is very interesting. But if you're looking for fundamental change out of Washington, D.C., you're not going to get it with either the Democrat or Republican Party, even if you give the conservatives, libertarians, and Tea Party candidates more votes. In other words, grow the various caucuses that support those political philosophies or ideologies. So I'm not for wasting time, because if you're going to waste time, what are you up against? And this extends to the state level. You first have to fight your own Republican Party in the district that you're trying to get nominated at. And they're largely controlled by moderate Republicans, so-called Republicans in name only. In other words, what used to be called liberals and now is called progressives. Does that mean every district is like that? No. Does that mean every Senate seat is like that? No. But what happens, and it happens too frequently, is you have people that go to Congress and get elected running on a very much a conservative stump speech. In other words, on conservative positions or libertarian positions or Tea Party positions. They do get elected, both for the Senate and the House. And then what happens? Slowly but surely, they get co-opted. And usually, the longer they stay, they no longer are truly conservative or truly libertarian. And the reason is not hard to understand. They want a leadership position, a committee appointment, or a subcommittee appointment. That's one way the leadership co-opts them. The other way, an important way, is campaign funds. You see, once you're elected, you have the incumbent advantage. Most incumbents get reelected over 90% of the time. Sometimes it's as high as 95% of the time. It's very, very difficult to unseat an incumbent, especially one that's been there for 3, 4, 5, or even 10 or more terms. And the incumbents know that. Part of the job when you're a congressman, congresswoman, or senator is you have to raise a lot of money if you want to get reelected. And that means you have to go to the so-called donor base, the people that have the big money, hat in hand, and ask for their campaign contributions, a donation, and hope you get a large one. Now, if you're an incumbent on a key committee that is of interest to that business owner industry, oh, you'll get the campaign contribution from the executives of that company that wants, let's say, a change in the tax law to keep it simple, or it could be a subsidy. And there's an implicit assumption that, okay, senator or congressman, representative, we'll give you this money, but you understand, here's what we really are interested in. Here's what we want. And if you get reelected, we're expecting access. In other words, when we call, we expect to get an appointment, and we expect to have time for you to hear out what we want. And then if it's turned into legislation, that you'll vote for it. That's the way the game is played. Perfectly legal. It goes on all the time in both parties. You see, the first question you have to ask yourself is, do I trust this person? Do I trust this person? And the problem is, you're going to be fooled. I've been fooled. You're going to be fooled. The person talks like a conservative or talks like a classical liberal or a libertarian. In other words, he's for a representative republic, a limited government, according to the Constitution. And then either 2 years later or 4 years later or 6 years later, you check and you find out, oh, they're still talking like that. But when you look at their voting record, they don't come out 100% or 90% or even 80%. If you're lucky, they might be 70% or above. In other words, on the key votes that matter, where you can determine whether or not they're voting is conservative or libertarian, you find out they haven't been. And it seems that the longer they're there, the worse it gets, where you have leadership that's under 50%. And again, I'm using the Conservative Review as a source, but there are other rating agencies in terms of the candidates. I'm relying on this. In the past, I've relied on others. Where do we end up? I have no real candidate for Congress, Senate. I take it back. For Senate, I do. But my problem is I'm for limited government. I'm a classical liberal. I believe the size of the federal government is simply out of control. Spending's out of control. The size of the federal government is out of control. We could easily cut 50% of the spending. And I'm not talking just discretionary spending. But even, let's say And I'm not going to do this, by the way, for a number of reasons. But let's say I wanted to run for Congress and run as a Republican. And I make my views known. And I'm an open book because they can listen to all my shows. I'm not going to take my shows down. What's the problem? First, they're going to have a battle royal with the incumbent. And remember, I'm in Texas that generally has more conservative members. Not all over, but where I'm at was very much, well, at one time it was all a Democratic. At one time, Texas was solidly Democratic. Over time, what has happened? It has turned Republican. And it's very much tilts a little bit to the right. But I'm going to have to fight the incumbent and probably a moderate if he's been there any length of time. So I have a battle on my hands. Now, once, let's say I got lucky, lightning strikes. And let's say someone with a lot of money or a number of people, a lot of money, gave to my campaign. And like Trump, I can be articulate. What's the problem? The incumbent has the advantage because most people simply don't follow politics. Until I decided to pursue a career in talk radio, I didn't really follow politics. Not to the extent, not nearly to the extent that I do now. And that's what any new person, an outsider faces, whether they're Donald Trump, who has a lot of money and doesn't need campaign contributions, but he's the exception. The rule is about 99% of the people running depend very much on campaign contributions, both from large donors and small donors. And even if they should get elected, we'll spend a lot of time and energy every day trying to get campaign contributions, because if you're running for a House seat, every 2 years, you're up for re-election, which is the way it should be. And you know, if you can get by, if you can get two or three in a row, that incumbent advantage will then start working for you. What happens is people sell out, some quicker than others, because you better believe the leadership will be on your case and will be expecting, demanding that you vote the party line or the speaker line, whatever way the speaker wants to go. They don't tolerate dissent very well, even though you should be able to vote your conscience, what you think is best for your district. So I'm not very interested that much who's going to be the next speaker. I don't know if it's Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, Kathy McMorris Rogers, maybe even Texan Pete Sessions. I doubt seriously that Representative Paul Ryan will run for it. I think he's happy where he's at and wants to deal with, I think, a very important issue, although I don't necessarily agree with what he's going to propose, because I'm very much for the consumption tax. He wants fundamental tax reform. So do I. And I'm for something along the lines of the fair tax. Now, I have my own version of it, and I'm hoping shortly, I think within the next 2 weeks, Donald Trump will announce and post his tax reform plan, his position paper on taxes. And I think it's about 2 weeks that this will happen. That doesn't mean he might postpone it, but I think he needs to really reignite his campaign. He's been running in the roughly 25% to 35% range. He's gotten as high as 40%. And there are polls that have him obviously lower than that. He's way ahead of everybody else. That's what I need to quickly say. But there are a number of people that are potentially, and that's the operative word, could take over his lead. Who are they? Ben Carson could. Carly Fiorina could. Marco Rubio could. And don't count Ted Cruz out. On my next show, I'm going to have a clip because I was in the newsroom. They're trying to put the newspaper to bed. And I saw Ted Cruz at the FRC, the Family Research Council meeting of social conservatives, evangelical conservatives. And I'm definitely going to play not all of it, but at least a part of what he said. I'll give you a little tease. He was saying, what I will do the first day, if elected president, what will I do the first day I'm in office? And he started to tick them off. And what happened? The crowd stood and cheered. And then they sat down. Number two, he gave it. They stood and cheered. So I'm going to have that as a clip. But before I forget, The way you listen to this show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com. You spell that pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have a picture of me in the studio. Right below it, you'll have links to the last 60 to 80 shows. And I'm about ready. Next week, I'll delete the June shows, so it'll go back to about 60. So it fluctuates from roughly 60 to 80 shows. Underneath, and I'm looking at the page right now, you'll have those ratings for those Republicans that have an 80% or more. And there are quite a few of them. Not as many as I would like, and I really would like more to be in the high 80s or at least in the low 90s. But there's a number of them, but the problem is there's simply not enough. You're looking at maybe two dozen, three dozen people. And there are certainly conservatives in the 70s, but that's the problem. There are just simply not enough votes. The name of the game, both in the House and the Senate, is votes. You have people, the whip has to get the votes. In show business, in radio and television, it's ratings. To get bills passed, it's votes. You need very much a united party, and that's the problem with the Republican Party. We don't have a united party. Why? Because the majority of this party is moderate Republicans. They're not conservatives. They're not libertarians. They're not classical liberals. They're only a few are come out of the Tea Party movement. But if you take all those groups together, you'll be hard-pressed to elect the speaker. Hard-pressed. So who's going to really determine who the next speaker is? It's not the conservatives. It's not any of those groups that I mentioned. It's going to be the moderate Republicans. And that's why I get a little upset with publications, as well as writers, talking heads, that ostensibly say they're conservative, complain about Donald Trump not being conservative. Well, excuse me. The Republican Party isn't conservative. Have you checked lately? I think you're in for a big surprise if you do. Because most of the Republican Party are below 70%. That's as far as I will go in drawing the line. That disturbs me. What it means is, locally, we have to challenge moderate Republicans. And some are, like Boehner, at 35%. He's where a lot of Democrats are at. Now, the Democrats go to zero, folks. So let's be fair to John. He only has a little more than a month to go. Apparently wants to retire. And we were speculating in the newsroom, why do you think he did this? Now, I said, I think there's, and I could be wrong, I have no inside information on this. John Boehner doesn't call me. I think he probably got a seven-figure offer to work on K Street as a lobbyist. Or consultant, whatever the title is. Yes, I said seven figures. I'm talking $1 million plus. Many of the representatives that retire, especially those that were on key committees and were in the House many years, they routinely get six-figure offers. In other words, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's payday for them. And they have a limited amount of time. It's like being a sports star. Any day you go on the field, your career could be ended, or you could have a serious injury, such as the Dallas Cowboy quarterback. So there are many years of being in the House, because usually it is years. It's not a one-term or three- or four-year term. Most of the people I'm talking about that get these kind of offers have been in the House at least 10 terms. In other words, we're talking probably 20 years plus. In Boehner's case, it's around 25 years. But it's not a question of just the seniority. It's a question of connections. Who do you know? Who are you friends with? And when you're speaker, you appoint. You have the power to appoint who are the chairman of the key committees as well as the sub-chairman of the subcommittees. So I will not be surprised at all that we hear a news story probably sometime around Christmas when people aren't paying attention. Boehner will probably go on a vacation and then come back most likely in January and he'll have a new job. It'll be announced probably over the Christmas holidays. Might be sooner. I think he deserves a rest. If I were him, I'd take a nice long vacation with the wife, see the world, and then come back rested, suntan, relaxed, and then go to my new job with a nice big office and a nice fat paycheck of not six, seven figures. At one time, it was six figures. Today, I think Boehner will get seven. I really do. Why? He knows all the leaders. He knows the people. They're his guys and gals. He picked them. So don't be surprised. It's payday. He finally gets to cash it in. It's done all the time. Sometimes they go to industry. Sometimes they become lobbyists or consultants. I'll tell you this. He's at least going to get six figures and probably a very high six figures, mid six figures. That's $500,000, folks. And yes, a lot of that is taxes, but that's just part of his compensation package. You see, ladies and gentlemen, that's the problem with Washington. There's a word I'm searching for, and I can't think of it. People routinely retire from Congress, retire the Senate, and a short period of time later, they're either on K Street, and that's the street where the lobbyists are. And what do lobbyists do? They take the money of their clients, usually large corporations, who pay a lot of money to hire someone that looks out for their interest and knows where to go, can get the appointment, and can make a presentation telling what his clients want. And that goes on all the time. Remember Senator Lott from Mississippi? At the time, I was very impressed with him. Well, he's been gone from the Senate many, many years, but he's still raking it in on K Street. I don't know how long John Boehner is going to stay in Washington. I would say maybe 5 years, 10 years. He is 65, so he might be slowing down, but he still has, a good 5 to 10 years of making not congressman money, but real money. So I wish John Boehner well, but I'm glad he's leaving. And if the conservative wing, the right wing of the Republican Party had the votes, I wouldn't vote for any of them, including Paul Ryan, because I don't think much is going to change. Until we get a Republican president that really is going to shake up the Republican Party, and that's not going to be an establishment nominee. And remember, as far as I'm concerned, and this is no secret, the establishment candidate was and is still Jeb Bush. And should Jeb Bush simply keep fading away, remember, he has a lot of money, a lot of staying power. This is very much a marathon race. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. So the one with the most wind, in this case money, tends to be the favorite. The problem is, yeah, you have a lot of money, but you start spending the money and you need more money and you won't get more money unless you get results. In other words, win primaries. And if the polls are any indication how the voters are going to vote, you're not going to win with 7, 8, or 9, or 10%. You're going to need to get, hopefully, a majority of the votes. Many states, it's winner take all. In some states, it's divided up depending on how many votes you get. The problem with Jeb Bush is he thought he had it locked up. Once he had all that money, he first thought that would scare a lot of potential candidates away. No, it didn't. Why? I call it the Obama effect. A lot of people looked at President Obama, who really came from nowhere. Most people had never heard of him, with the exception of Democrats that were at the convention, heard him speak. He was a one-term senator, just elected from Illinois. And he ran for president, got elected, and he won twice. I've never been impressed with the gentleman. I always considered him an empty suit, not qualified for the job, doesn't have the experience, doesn't have the skill set. But that didn't stop Barack Obama. And as a result, we still have 15 candidates running in the Republican Party. And hopefully, they will take the lead of Scott Walker. Excuse me, there are 14. I forgot. I knew Scott Walker got out, but I didn't reduce the count. There are now 14. Scott Walker, I think, did the courageous thing. Although his numbers have, in polls, really been tumbling. I think he saw the handwriting on the wall and decided to do the right thing. I think he did the right thing. He suspended his campaign. He could not see a pathway to victory. There are just simply too many people that had double digits as well as single digits, a lot larger than he did. Even though he had a very good organization, my understanding is, in Iowa. And many of his close supporters were surprised because they thought he would at least keep in the race through Iowa and see what happened in Iowa. But after some soul searching and praying, he decided to get out. I'm glad he did. The problem is, we still have 14. Or the Republican Party still has 14. I'm not a Republican, by the way. I might sound like it, but I'm not. What I'm trying to sort out and help you decide is which candidate do you want to support? And as I said in previous programs, I've narrowed the list down to four people: Donald Trump, Ben Carson, Ted Cruz. And every time I do this, I forget. I feel like Rick Perry, Governor Rick Perry. Remember, I'm going to close down three agencies, and he forgot the third. I get to three and forget the fourth. Who's the fourth? It was Scott. Oh, that's my problem. It was Scott Walker. You see, I was disappointed that Scott Walker got out, because that leaves three. There are only three Republican candidates that I would vote for. Only three out of the 14 remaining. Because most of the big, there's at least five or six candidates that are big government conservatives or big government moderates. Who are they? First and foremost is Jeb Bush. Won't vote for him and his fellow Floridian Marco Rubio. Won't vote for him, even though he came out of the Tea Party in Florida. The Tea Party put him in the Senate, but he's a perfect example of what happens. That's a big step up. Beat out a candidate for the primary, got elected, and then what happened? He got his turn had by the neoconservatives, the John McCains, the Lindsey Grahams. He was put on the Foreign Relations Committee of the Senate. And he became buddies, and he became the poster boy for the neocons. And he's still their candidate. I listen to several talk shows, and they love Marco Rubio. And he's very articulate. He's very smooth on his feet, especially when the area is foreign policy. And the neoconservatives, as well as some of the conservatives, want Marco Rubio for their candidate. He is not the establishment pick. The pick was clearly Jeb Bush. But if Jeb Bush should stumble badly, there's Marco Rubio. Here I am. I need money, and that's one of his problems. You can win as many debates as you want, but if you can't get the money, if the money's not flowing in, then you have two problems. You're going to be very limited in terms of your resources to establish an organization that you definitely need to get out the vote, but more importantly, to develop a message, political advertisements, commercials on television and the radio. Money is essential. And like I said, Bush got a lot of it up front. So Marco Rubio has done well in both debates. I don't think as well as many of the commentators are carrying on, but he was in the top tier. Let's be fair. But I'd like to see a little bit more questions answered by him outside of the area of foreign policy. They tend to go to him when they have a foreign policy question and then compare him with the leader, Donald Trump. I still maintain Donald Trump is getting smart. He's not showing it, but he's getting smart. What do I mean? Donald Trump has a lot of money. He can hire the best talent. And I think he has hired the best talent. And part of that talent is writing position papers on anywhere from 6 to 12 of the key leading issues that any candidate needs to be conversant on. And what Donald Trump is gradually doing is rolling out those position papers. Remember, the first primary is not into the 1st of February. We still got 3 months. And the next debate is five weeks away. So Donald Trump has time to get smart and to read those position papers, talk to the experts that wrote them, ask questions, and then what he needs to do is turn those position papers into a message that becomes part of his stump speech and becomes answers to questions at the debate. I think he's doing that between events. And I hope I'm right. But if I'm not right, what's going to happen? Donald Trump will lose. He will fall. He will stumble. And it's hard to stumble when you're at 40% back down to single digits. I don't think Donald Trump is going to do that. I think he's going to do his homework. I'm pleading him to do his homework, because Donald Trump is very much a detailed person. Now, he delegates and has people providing him the information he needs and feeding the information he needs. But what's critical is you got to digest it. You got to make it your own. You got to come over like you're the expert, that you knew this all along, even though you might have just learned it last night. And Donald Trump knows he has to vary his stump speech. It gets a little boring, especially if you're in the press following Donald Trump, to listen to the same speech day after day after day. And Donald Trump although very good delivering that dump speech, made remarks that he knows he has to change it. He needs to sharpen the message. See what works, see what doesn't work. What gets a response, what doesn't get a response. And that's what he's doing. In campaign events where he is the star, as well as, for example, at the FRC meeting, the Family Research Council meeting, where a number of the candidates, not all of the candidates, but Donald Trump was there, and these are largely social conservatives, religious conservatives, and I think he did well. A few of the candidates had scheduling conflicts and couldn't attend, but most of the candidates were there, including Donald Trump. So I think Donald Trump is going to surprise a lot of people. Some of those surprises you'll start to see in a stump speech. He should gradually start revealing his position, the specifics on his tax reform. I hope he publishes position paper soon, definitely before the next debate. What he needs to be doing, though, prior to that, is gradually work into a stump speech what he's going to say to sharpen the message and see what questions people ask. Now, he might not do that. Another tack or strategy he could take is to spring it on the people at the debate either the day before by publishing the position paper and then at the debate answer questions on it. And I think he's going to do that. Now, what he said is, and this was over a week ago, that in 3 weeks he'll tell you what his tax plan is. I can't wait because, and I've said this on previous shows, if he can get the economic incentives right, in other words, the taxes right, and he needs to fundamentally reform it, not tweak it. If he comes out with a plan that tweaks it, I think it will be a mistake and will hurt him. Whether it will kill his candidacy, I don't know, but it will be a terrific missed opportunity should he take that approach. And he might very well do that. All I know so far, he wants it to be a lot more simple. Who doesn't? He wants to lower the burden on the middle class. He wants to reduce corporate taxes, although he does want to go after hedge funds where they have a carry interest that's taxed on capital gains. I think that's one of his pet projects, and he wants it graduated. That, just based on those general statements, I think he's going to tweak it, and that would be a mistake. In other words, he'll keep the income tax in place. And then I'm probably going to take him off my list because I'm looking for the candidate that truly does support a consumption tax. Unfortunately, at present, there's only one candidate that I'm aware of. Actually, there are two. There's one candidate that I'm aware of that favors the fair tax, and that's Mike Huckabee. I have other problems with Huckabee. I think he's a big government conservative. But it would be tempting if he got the nomination to vote for him. I don't think he's going to get the nomination, but I look at a number of issues, but the critical issue to me, by far, the primary issue is we need fundamental tax reform. So I'm looking for that candidate that will come out in favor of a broad-based consumption tax along the lines of the fair tax. And if any of the candidates come out for it, I'm going to pay a lot close attention to them. What's a little bit interesting is Ben Carson wants a proportional tax of 10%. That's what he says. I'm for proportional taxation. In other words, everybody pays the same rate. Because if you go through the history of the United States regarding taxes, that's the way it should be. I'm not for progressive or graduated income taxes. Everyone should pay the same rate, and obviously the rich that have more money will pay much higher taxes. I'm not for what Karl Marx wanted, was a progressive income tax, and that's what we have, a progressive taxation today. It's about time, I would say long overdue, that a Republican go back to a proportional tax, and Ben Carson has made it very clear he wants to do that at 10%. He has a problem. 10% simply won't fund the federal government. And I have no problem with that because I think the federal government should be cut in half. But he's going to have a hard time, especially when you're dealing with the Republican Party. That is, again, a moderate progressive party. It's not a conservative party. It's not a libertarian party. It's not for limited government. It's not people. The majority are simply, the Republican Party doesn't have the votes. You know, I woke up to that 9 years ago. I finally said, and I'm getting up there in age, I'd like to have at least two presidents in my lifetime that I could vote for in good conscience, knowing that they're conservative / libertarian classical liberal. In other words, share my political philosophy. The only president that I could vote for that had met that criteria was Ronald Reagan, and he had a deal with a Democratic Congress, and he wasn't perfect, but that was the only person. It certainly wasn't Richard Nixon. He's just another, he's a perfect example of the history of the Republican Party. Richard Nixon was a progressive Republican, a very progressive Republican. And unfortunately, both the candidates and the ones that have won that were Republicans, they have largely been moderate to progressive Republicans. The Republican Party has never been a conservative party. It has never been a libertarian party. It's certainly not a Tea Party party. And that's why I'm not really that interested in who they pick. Because I'm looking at these numbers. They're Ds. There's one C. We have an F. I'll go down the list. Kevin McCarthy, probably the front runner. He has an F at 45%. Stephen Scalise, a C at 74%. Representative Tom Price, Georgia, a C at 70%. Representative Pete Sessions from Texas, a D at 63%. From Washington, Representative Rogers, Kathy Rogers, an F at 49%. And yes, the Republican vice presidential candidate for Romney in 2012, an F. Paul Ryan, an F from Wisconsin at 58%. Now, he's not too far from a D, but listen, I consider, and I'm lowering my standards, you got to have at least an A or a B and some Cs, I would consider conservative. If you're a libertarian, you're probably in the 80s or 90s. And that's why I say, what do we have today in the United States? We have a two-party tyranny. You got a choice. You can vote Democratic or Republican. And they're both left-of-center parties. Now, they might not talk like it, because some of these people would lead you to believe that they're conservatives that have F's and D's. They're not. They're relying on you never to check up on them and never to really follow it. And guess what? They're absolutely right. Most people will never look at these ratings. And that's why they don't care about them. You need to care, because how they vote determines what, if anything, gets done. So where the leadership is primarily liberal progressive, in other words, they have D's and F's, you get what you vote for, and if that's the majority, that's what happens. That's why we don't have leadership in the Republican Party, in the sense of they're not going to championing limited government and balanced budgets, real balanced budgets, not this 10 years out or 37 years out will eventually balance it. You know, that's the game they always play. Oh, in 10 years, we'll have a balanced budget. 2 years later, in 10 years, we'll have a balanced budget. And in 2 years later, in 10 years, we'll have a balanced budget. We don't have time for those games anymore, and they are games. They're ruining this country, and there's no sense of urgency. What really needs to be done is to replace the entire leadership. But you're not going to succeed if you don't have the votes. Remember, votes count. Votes matter. So you're not going to get fundamental change from the Republican Party. That's why we need a third party. Now, Donald Trump has made it very clear he's not going to run as a third party candidate. And I believe him, because there's a problem with that. It's very costly to organize and get on the ballot candidates, both for Congress and the Senate, as well as president across the nation, with a new third party. I would say it's almost impossible. You certainly are not going to do it the very first time. It's going to take years to do that. But you got to start somewhere. Now, this is not going to happen until we reach that tipping point. We're not far from that tipping point. And that doesn't mean once we hit 50% and the Gallup poll says 50%, that day it's going to tip. No, it's at the tipping point. We need a breakaway. And what I see happening is a number of conservatives, libertarians, Tea Party folks will be the core, together with, in terms of the voters, the core will be former Republicans and Democrats that are now independents, support and organize and make the effort. And this takes a lot of people and a lot of money. not as many people as I make out. You need people literally in every district, every state across this country, first to organize that third party, find candidates to run, and then run and get the money. And a core of those will be former Republicans and maybe even a few Democrats, although I think that's being very, very optimistic. And the key difference will be what these people stand for, what principles inform what the party stands for. I think the key will be a constitutional representative republic. And what that means is limited government, balanced budgets, and it means closing federal departments, and those departments that are left drastically cutting their budgets. And you know and I know where's the money. It's in welfare programs that are roughly about 25% of the budget. Entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, that's roughly another 25%. And National Defense, Department of Defense, which is roughly around 18 or 19%. That's over two-thirds of the budget right there. That's where the money is. Yeah, I want to close 8 to 10 departments. And that really should be done first to show that you're serious. The way to stop these out-of-control departments and agencies is not fight them case by case. It's close them permanently. Because what is the problem? We have a bureaucracy, a huge bureaucracy, largely in Washington, that are advocates for their department. And they partner with both Democrats and Republicans to perpetuate the programs that the department is in charge of. So the way to quickly eliminate that waste of time, energy, is to close them permanently. And if you're for limited government, representative government, you're for example, eliminating Department of Housing and Urban Welfare. You're for eliminating Department of Transportation. You're for eliminating the Department of Energy. You're for eliminating, closing permanently, the Department of Education, as well as agriculture and commerce and labor and the Department of Interior. That gets people's attention, and that causes a lot of resistance, but that demonstrates to the American people that you're serious. And ladies and gentlemen, the situation we're in is beyond serious. We not only need to close permanently federal departments and agencies, we also need to make drastic cuts in the size and scope of government, and you got to go where the money's at. And that's in welfare, that's in defense, and that's in entitlements. That's doing the heavy lifting. That's showing you're serious, and you got to sell it to the American people. No one said this was going to be easy. No one said this is going to be popular. But let me remind you, I want you to ask this question. What federal departments do you interact with, or what agency? In my case, I can think of only one. Now, if I were considering a vacation abroad, I'd have to interact with the Department of State. Let me correct myself. Two. Department of Treasury, maybe state if I take a vacation, and the Social Security Administration. That's it. And for most people, it's only the Department of Treasury. In other words, the IRS. And if we have fundamental tax reform, the IRS will be abolished. Instead of having tens of thousands of employees, we abolish it completely. We're still going to need a couple of hundred people in the Department of Treasury to make sure the states and the retailers forward the consumption tax that people will pay when they spend their money. And we also need that same Department of Treasury to send out the tax prebates that every American citizen will receive if we have a consumption tax. Now, I want you to ask yourself a question. How many candidates are talking about this? Very few, if not any. But that is what needs to be done, and the sooner the better. You see, I look at the candidates. I've seen what they've done in the Senate or the House or when they were governor. And most governors have to balance their budgets, which is good. I'm not against that. But you need to look at what spending they have. And some of them, unfortunately for them, if you live in the state, have run deficits. Now, they quickly make the case, well, you should have seen the guy before me. He really messed it up and we're improving. Well, a balanced budget should be the minimum requirement, actually, because you're always going to have the unexpected event. You should have a small surplus. So I'm down to three candidates, Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and Ted Cruz. I was hoping Senator Rand Paul would be on the list. He initially was on the list. But I'm bringing something up that you need to be aware of, and I've said this before, and I'm still paying very close attention to what the three people on my list are saying. And you should too. Don't believe what they say and take it as gospel on the in either the debates or in the stump speech regarding illegal immigration. I want to hear a lot more details from all the candidates in that area. They're all going to say they want to secure the border. I got to wrap it up. I got to wrap up the show. I just got the signal. They want me to close it down, so I will. But you got to be very careful what they're doing, both on the illegal immigration side as well as the legal immigration side, and how they would deport the 30 to 50 million illegals that are here. I want to hear specifics, not promises, specifics, as to how you would go about it. Now, with that, I'll close out the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.